The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Hey, welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herb Street, Pollock and Negandhi. I'm your host, Kevin Negandhi here. Really, really looking forward to having Lewis Riddick on the show. One of my favorite people at ESPN. And also the perspective that I think sometimes is really helpful leading into a draft. It's the executive former player who's on TV, where he sees things on three different levels. And in this conversation, we talk a little bit about the adjustment, how the pandemic tape is a little bit different from past seasons, and also the conversations and how important it is for executives that to have those relationships with college coaches to better understand the players while you're scouting, gathering information. Before we get to Lewis, two things I want to quickly mention. First, it's draft season. So in addition to listening to this podcast, you should also be listening to the First Draft with our friends Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay and Field Yates. You can follow First Draft wherever you listen to podcasts. Those three men and their opinions are fantastic in the conversation leading up to April 29th. And also, baseball's back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live Major League Baseball games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/baseball. And reminding you, too, that each week leading up to the draft, we will have a special analyst, guest, or even a player that hopes to hear their name called in the first round on draft night, April 29th on ESPN and ABC. They'll join us with their perspective and how they see things leading up to that special night on Thursday in a couple of weeks. For now, enjoy Lewis Riddick. All right, it's great to have Lewis Riddick here with us. We can give him many titles. Obviously, he's going to be part of our draft coverage on ESPN. And, you're our resident GM, Lewis. And when it comes to that, I want to get your assessment of certain players. But at the same time, how does a front office approach things? And let's start with, because it's going to be the biggest conversation, and it has been already, the quarterback situation. I wanted to understand the gap between these five quarterbacks. And of course, starting with Trevor Lawrence, the gap between Trevor to Zach Wilson, to Justin Fields, to Trey Lance, to Mac Jones, in no such order. But is it a huge gap? How do you view this?
I think the reason why most people who you're talking about this, Kevin, say that there's a big gap between Trevor Lawrence and the field, let's just start there, is simply because the body of work for Trevor is much more significant than everyone else. Meaning he has played at a high level for three years. He's played at a high level against great competition, relatively speaking. I mean, you can sit here and debate whether or not the ACC is great competition or not, but on the biggest of stages, he has pretty much acquitted himself pretty well. Now, there's always, some ways that you can pick apart his performance against certain teams, but for the most part, he has played at a very high level, and he has sustained it over a much longer period of time as compared to Zach and Justin and Mac in particular, all right? And that number one gives people comfort in knowing that, okay, look, at least we know what we're getting with Trevor, much more so relative to whether or not we know what we're getting with these other three, although these other three may have, in different spots, may have much more explosive, dramatic moments in their very short career as compared to Trevor. But that's really what, see, at the top of the draft, that's what we're really trying to parse out, is who gives us the best chance of not being wrong, more so than the best chance of hitting a home run. Because that's what you're trying to do at the top here. Do not fool yourself into, believing that what you're looking for at the very top of the draft is that transcendent player that can do things that no one else in the history of football has ever done. No. What you really get judged on is whether or not you have someone who doesn't make you look like a fool at the top. And Trevor does that for you more so than these other guys. Because look, Zach Wilson can do things from a throwing perspective that Trevor Lawrence can't do. As far as off-platform throws, movement outside the pocket, accuracy down the field outside the pocket, off-platform. He does things that Trevor can't do. But Trevor has played longer. Trevor has played against better competition, for a longer period of time. Justin Fields, same way. athletically, when you watch him, he is phenomenal. He's built like a power lifter from the waist down. He's built like a thoroughbred from the waist up. He can throw the football from all those different platform angles, you know, that Zach Wilson can. He just hasn't done it very long. People then start picking apart, well, why did he transfer from Georgia? Why couldn't he just stick it out down there and just stay the course down there? Then when he gets to Ohio State, he has really one really good year. Then he has a very stop and start type of year in 2020 where we didn't even know if they were going to play at one point in time. And then, you know, it's not a long body of work like Trevor Lawrence. And then, of course, all the BS starts about how committed is he, blah, 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 which I think we've debunked that enough to the point where it's a non-story now, especially if you go ahead and talk to the people there at Ohio State. But there's still those questions about, okay, well, where is he in his developmental phase? And how much do we not know about him compared to Trevor? Okay. Then you move to Trey Lance. Trey didn't even play football in 2020, not by his doing, not because he didn't want to play, but because that's just the way it happened with North Dakota State, and then they played in the spring. But I'll tell you this, of the first three guys that we've talked about, you can without a doubt look at his offense, what they asked him to do relative to what NFL offenses ask a quarterback to do, and you could probably make a one-to-one comparison with him as far as projecting his skills to the NFL better than any of the other two I just talked about. As far as working under center, pre-snap motion, pre-snap reads, post-snap reads, quarterback being in control of the offense. It looks like, I just put this on Twitter the other day, it looks like Arthur Smith was calling the plays for North Dakota State based upon the kind of things that they try to do up there.
That is the Falcons head coach, yes.
Exactly. It looks like Kyle Shanahan was calling plays in San Francisco. So you start going, well, dang. Well, why isn't he being talked about at the very top? I'll tell you why. Level competition and body of work. How long has he done it? So is the gap that big as far as their skill level and as far as their, you know, mental acuity, their mental engine, their football intellect? No, it's not. Mm. It's Trevor's done it longer. Mac Jones, 1.5 years basically as a starter. Mac just doesn't look aesthetically like the other guys athletically. But if you ask the great quarterback tutors of this game, what do you need to play quarterback in the NFL at a high level? You need decision-making and accuracy. You don't need to be 4-4. You don't need to have to be able to throw the ball like Patrick Mahomes. We'd like for you to be able to, but you don't have necessarily need to. But the reason why people don't want to put him up there right now is because recency bias, what we become accustomed to seeing, body of work. Oh, but he had Jalen Waddle. He had Henry Ruggs back then. You know, he had Jerry Jeudy. He had, you know, just Devontae Smith.
Yeah,
you know what? Joe Burrow had Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase too. Mm-hmm. No one talked about that with him. So we pick and choose what we want to, you know, ignore and what we want to accentuate based upon what our preconceived notions are of these guys. So long story short, how big is the gap? I don't think it's that big at all. Mm. Quite honestly, it's a matter of taste. It's all subjective. It's a matter of what do you want? What do you value? But at the very, you know, the one thing that everybody values at the very top of the draft is they value certainty. They don't like uncertainty. And that's what Trevor Lawrence gives you. He gives you less uncertainty than the rest of these guys based upon the fact that he's played longer. Because otherwise, they're all right there. They all have their own positives and negatives. And that's why, you know, in the end, Kev, look. If at 3 San Francisco decides to pick Mac Jones and Mac Jones wins 3 Super Bowls in San Francisco, are we all going to sit here and go, I just said this the other day, are we all going to sit here and go, well, I'm not going to cheer because you know what? They should have drafted Justin Fields because he was a better athlete. No one's going to give a damn.
No one. And I feel like out of all the quarterbacks in all the spots, if you're the quarterback taken 3rd, you're in the best position to succeed. From the organizational standpoint, the pieces and the parts. Sure. Look at Patrick Mahomes. Again, freak player, but at the same time, he was put in a phenomenal position compared to the other quarterbacks taken in that draft at the moment, coming in, right? And then you can make that same conversation with Sam Darnold, right? You can make the same conversation with Josh Allen. If you're surrounded by the right parts and the right organization, making the right decisions from a coaching staff perspective and the talent around, you're off to a head start here.
Let me just say this, though, Kent. Let me say this. And you know what? You're dead on. You know that. We know this. We know more so than the individual players themselves what determines success, failure, is what is happening to them once they get into those buildings. But the thing is, we don't have tape of that. We don't have Stats Pass or Pro Football Focus that will sit here and quantify on a screen or on a sheet of paper just how important that is, or we can't really measure the influence that coaches and systems and locker rooms and culture have on player development. We can't quantify that. We can't objectify it. So you know what we do? We just go, yeah, that sounds great and all, but just tell me what his height, his weight, his ball speed, and his 40 time is, because I can wrap my mind around that, and I can actually touch and see that. So that must be all that matters. And we know better, but we still don't care because we can't get inside there. And that's where people's arguments start to fall apart. That's where when we look at successful quarterbacks versus guys who are busts, that's usually where the disconnect happens.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, and we don't really pay attention to, and we don't really dig into what happened once they got him. What was really going on there? And that's why I look at the Jets. That's why Jets fans get so salty, man. They just do, because they know what has happened to most of their quarterbacks. They know what happened to Sam, but they're almost in denial about it.
Yes.
Right? They're in denial about it because they can't really get in there and see what happened, so they'll just kind of ignore it and, like, conveniently set it aside. But we know.
Yeah, and you know, it's great to have your perspective here too, because you are the executive, former player, and now the TV guy. So you've seen all three levels here. You understand that they're all different perspectives on those three levels.
Mm-hmm.
Help me understand, especially this audience, the College Football Podcast audience, when you go to a pro day as the executive background who's now on TV, what are you looking for? Because what we get off the pro days are the measurables and, hey, you completed 55 out of 60 passes. What are you doing as the executive there while you're watching and at the same time talking to the coaching staff of the university where that player was just at?
Yeah, as far as the watching part of it is concerned, Kev, I'm just trying to get confirmation of what I've seen on tape, meaning the player actually in person when I'm 5 feet away from him, or 6 feet in this environment. Mm-hmm. When I'm 6 feet away from him, they actually look like what I thought they were going to look like. They actually, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, since that's what we're always talking about here, the ball kind of comes off their hand and they throw the football in a way that represents what I thought I saw on tape. And more times than not, when you see them in person, it's even better than what you saw on tape, because you literally can hear the football cutting through the air. You see how tight the spiral is. You see how quick the arm action is. You see just how powerful and graceful a lot of these kids are. You know, when I saw Trey Lance throwing the football and I could hear the ball going, soop! You know, it's like, damn, okay.
You're not getting on tape, yeah.
Right. When you see him roll left, throw right, the good old, you know, the holy grail throw that everybody now is judging quarterbacks by, you see just how effortless these guys are. So that part of it is just really just a confirmation for me. What I really like is at 7 in the morning when I show up there at the Woody Hayes complex and I see Ryan Day walking across the field towards me and we stand there in the middle of the field and talk for an hour, that's what I'm getting out of it. Now it's, don't tell me what so-and-so and so-and-so on this radio station or that scout or this grounds crew guy or the person at Starbucks says about Justin Fields. You tell me. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Justin Fields. And now I'm going to assume – now this is assuming that you have the kind of relationship that will really be able to dig deep into and cut through the BS about a player. That's what I love about the pro day circuit. That's what I loved about – being a scout, being an executive, was the relationships, Kev. Getting the real information about, tell me what I'm getting with this guy. Tell me what the red flags are. Tell me what the, you know, the characteristics are that I don't ever have to worry about. Tell me what I should be able to, which should allow me to sleep good at night, and the things that should keep me up at night about whatever player it is. That's where you really separate yourself and really kind of distinguish yourself as a scout and as an executive. And that's what really helps you to kind of separate players, because you haven't coached them. You weren't around them. You didn't see them in your building every day. So you're going to have to take the word of certain people who you really trust. And the only way you can really, like, talking to you on Zoom, talking to you on the phone, or talking to you in person are three different things.
Mm-hmm.
You get three different levels of comfort and talking to someone in those three, through those three different mediums. That's what I loved about it. That's what I did with Ryan Day. That's what I did with Brian Hartline, the wide receiver coach, when I was there. That's what I do anytime I go down to Alabama, when I could actually go to Nick Saban's secretary, who was the secretary and his assistant when we were in Cleveland, and say, hey, look, I need some one-on-one time with coach. That's different than just listening to hearsay.
Yep.
And then my relationship with him, given the fact that he coached me,
mm-hmm.
I can add, there's certain things he's going to tell me maybe he wouldn't tell somebody else. That's what you're trying to do, man, because that's where you are setting yourself up to really get to authentically know the individual player in a way that will allow you to either make a good decision, make a bad decision, make a good decision, and then help the player once he gets into your, into your program. That's what I love about being out there on the road and being able to talk to these guys, because as Andy Reid says, and as he said all the time when I was in Philadelphia, don't ever forget that this is a people business and a relationship business. As soon as you think that you don't need to be able to, have those relationships and those contacts and have that free flow of information back and forth, as soon as you think you don't need that, you are going to get burned.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, look, that's one of the things that gets – look, I mean, I was shocked. I was shocked that some coaches tell me – the coaches who coach big-time programs tell me, you would be surprised at how many people don't call me. How many people don't ask my opinion about certain players? You'd be shocked. And I'm like, what? But, that arrogance a lot of times, Kevin, is what gets people into trouble at the NFL level.
Yes.
That feeling of thinking that because I'm at the NFL level, I've got all the answers. No, you don't. You don't.
Wild because that lack of information, I mean, you're having these conversations and you're talking about these relationships for access to information. You need information, right? And if you're closing the door on that, you're closing the door to information that you can use down the road that will be beneficial, whether it's scouting a player or whether you're facing that player down the road.
No, like
it's wild. And I want off of this conversation, I want to go in two avenues, but first let's go with one of them. Cause you brought up Ryan Day. Yeah. You brought up Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And those programs,
mm-hmm.
How much does that now influence you when you look at players specifically compared to not having that relationship with other programs? You give the benefit of the doubt with, hypothetically, the Alabamas as well as the Oklahomas and the Ohio States, but you don't have that benefit of the doubt, and it's not a knock. Let's just bring in Trey Lance in North Dakota State. You don't have the benefit of the doubt just because of the familiarity that you would normally have. How does that play a role then? What do you do as an executive to gain that access for more information?
You know what? That's where, again, that's why you're constantly trying to build those relationships, Kev. That's where maybe you can have a sit down, or rather you don't have the same level of comfort sitting down with the people at North Dakota State as you would sitting down with Nick Saban, right? And maybe you don't put as much weight initially into their evaluation or their opinion on a player as opposed to what I would put into Ryan Day or Nick Saban's because of my relationship with them. But you know what? That's part of this ever-evolving process of gathering information and developing these contacts. And there, you never even with the relationship that you have with certain coaches that may be like as tight as it can possibly be, they're not always going to be right either in their assessment of their own player. And, they may be biased also because it's their player to some degree. See, that's where you're counting on your personal relationship with these people to cut through some of that BS so you can actually get the real information from them. Because, look, we're all naturally inclined to protect our own and want to do what's right also for ourselves and our program and our players too. So You also have to be careful even with those guys who you trust the most. But see, that's the puzzle that you're always trying to put together here with this draft. That's why the draft, Kev, has so many inconsistencies with it as far as, players hitting and or players busting, because you never have it all. You never have a player just absolutely nailed down to a T. You don't. They're human beings. And then here's the one thing I think that's even more important, and that's not to get away from your question, which is getting this information and finding out all that you can about players pre-draft. post-draft is really where teams separate themselves. Post-draft, as soon as you turn in the card, as soon as Roger Goodell announces the name, you're on the clock as far as the development of that player. What are you doing now? How quickly are you getting information to this player? How quickly are you developing a relationship with them? How quickly are you knowing, finding out about his home life, the kind of pressures he's going to face, ways that you can help him kind of, you know, transition from being a college player to a pro player, helping him get settled in the city that he's going to live now, telling him where he can live, helping his family get adjusted, making sure if he has any kind of relationship issues, making sure he gets those ironed out, financial issues, all those different things that as individuals we deal with when you're not on the camera, when you're not doing SportsCenter or doing college football, you're dealing with wife, you're dealing with children, you're dealing with finances, you're dealing with your car breaking down and needing service, and to get all those. These guys are dealing with all those things too. And guess who they turn to in order to help them with guidance? Their organization, their players, their person in the player support programs, their players that can help them with mental health issues or and or any kind of counseling they need that way. That's where you start really building equity with these guys and helping them ascend maybe to a different level than they could at some other organization. And if you don't look internally and make sure you have it locked down airtight, I promise you other teams are trying to make sure that they do. And that's why there are certain teams that in the draft always seem to, you know, it's almost like, and then we start talking about these teams like, man, they must have some really damn good scouts. Well, yeah, they have some good scouts, but I'll tell you what they do have. They have a program that helps these guys reach their maximum potential that's far and away better than some other teams. It's just a fact. Everyone in the NFL ain't created equal across these 32 teams, man. And that's the thing that we need to, I believe, when we're discussing draft pick success and failure, that's the thing we need to dial in on more. But it's hard to, right? Because it's hard to really get these teams to open up and say, what do you do differently that other teams do? Because they don't want to give away their competitive advantage.
No.
That's where it really happens.
Intangibles, right? They're adding the stability for this 22, 23-year-old, or even some 21, 20, considering if they start early on there and they're a redshirt sophomore. There's another interesting thing, too, because we're coming in, you know, still in the pandemic, coming slowly on our way out, but so you can go to these pro days.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what did you notice on film this past season with the college play on the field compared to previous years? Did you notice anything from the start of the season to the end of the season when it came to developing talent and the progress of some of these players? What was different this past fall compared to previous years?
So no doubt you noticed from the very beginning to the end how much improvement these guys made as they were able to practice more, as teams – you know, the teams that didn't have so many stops and starts and disruptions, you noticed a continuity, especially along like offensive line play, secondary play, where there's a lot of communication going on. You noticed the fun. You noticed it from not even from like, let's just say from 1 month to the next, but just from 1 week to the next, you saw teams totally look totally different as you knew that they were able to continue to practice, as you knew that they got more reps based on the fact that maybe they didn't practice all summer long and didn't have the same kind of spring ball that they had before. There's no doubt. And I think as an evaluator, you have to make sure you get a good cross-section of film, you know, cataloged in order to get a true evaluation on some of these players. If you looked at all early season film, I promise you, you're missing the boat on how some of these guys improved from week one to week eight, as far as the number of games that they played. I made sure that this year in particular I did that, because there was a few guys who I evaluated who I looked at early season film, and I'm ready to turn it off and go, this guy, you turn it on in November, and I'm like, whoa. So then you go back and you look at maybe, you know, whether or not this guy was sick in particular, or he missed a few games, or the team had some interruptions as far as their practice schedule. And you go, and it starts that you have to take that into consideration. There is no doubt that from a scouting perspective this year, you had to be on top of each team's individual situation and each player's individual situation in a way that you never had to before. Otherwise, I promise you would make mistakes in the evaluation process because you weren't getting a true look at the players.
scouts are going to be tested, of course, in these conversations the next 2.5 weeks leading up to the draft on ESPN and ABC. Listen, we could go on and on about the quarterbacks. We can go on and on, you know, about the talent of the wide receivers. And you brought up a great point on Twitter recently about just some of the slot wide receivers and how just the game is completely changing. And it's past these three wide receivers. There's guys that can get a ton of talent and value late in the first round or the second round. I want to go to something that's dear to your heart. And that is secondary play.
Yep.
And specifically with the evolution of football changing so much, and it's a pass-friendly game, when you look at the cornerbacks here, when you look at the play here of the J.C. Horns, the Sertans of the world, the Farleys of the world, mm-hmm. you know, how much of a priority should that be for teams, especially at the later part of that, the first 10 picks of this draft?
Oh, it's – look, if you don't have these guys – if you don't have guys who are big, strong, fast, smart, can run all day, can line up at all different areas of the football field, you're going to be in trouble in the NFL, man. You're going to be in trouble if you don't prioritize that position. I mean, that's obviously a no-brainer. You're going to be in trouble even more in particular if you don't take care of the nickel position, which really isn't a – look, when – 15, 20 years ago, Kevin, the nickel position used to be the position that many times scouts and personnel departments looked at as a position that you threw the guys who weren't good enough to be number ones or number twos who played on the outside. That'd be a very foolish, naive way of looking at things in today's game, considering what I just tweeted, as you just referenced, which is the style of play that slot players are playing with now is much different than it was 15, 20 years ago. These guys now are home run hitters. They're 4-3, 4-2. They are guys like, you know, Dwayne Eskridge, Kadarius Toney. You can put Ja'Marr Chase in the slot. You can put Devontae Smith in the slot. And teams do. They do simply because the middle of the field is where you want to live and where you want to work offensively. It's the easiest throw for quarterbacks. And you have two-way goes in the middle of the field where corners don't have the benefit of the boundary working as like a fifth defender for them, as an extra defender for them to help them out. So you better put your best athletes better be able to move inside and play there. So you need corners who have three position versatility, meaning they can play outside, they can play the star position, which is the nickel position in Alabama terms, or the money position, which is the position opposite the star, which is the weak side player inside in sub defense. So you better have guys who can play all three. So think Tyrann Mathieu type guys. Mm-hmm. You better have guys like that. The days of big safeties, big DBs like myself, Steve Atwater, Dennis Smith, those guys, Kenny Easley, they're kind of getting phased out because the game has become much more horizontal, much mm-hmm. more spread, and these wide receivers are being moved all over the place in ways that they weren't before. So I know it's a passing league and it's a fantasy football type of league now, and everyone wants to know who the guys are going to score touchdowns. Well, you better make sure that you can evaluate guys who can defend these dudes, because if you don't and you don't take care of it, like those numbers, the numbers are going to go, you know, off the charts anyway now with another being added on to the season. But guys are getting faster, getting more specialized. It's a crazy time to be a DB, man. But if you're a good one, you're going to get paid out of your mind, because it's hard, man. It's hard defending these guys now. They are just
– I find it fascinating, too, because the listings of the guys I mentioned, it feels like they're on average at 6'1", 210 pounds, love the press coverage. Yep. That you get your arms and your physical off the line of scrimmage, because you have to slow down the guys like the Julio Jones coming out of breaks, right?
Yep.
When we look at this draft, and this is one of those, and I think I know where you're going, considering where everybody's going of late. When you look at this draft, who's the one player that we're going to be talking about a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? The one player you think that's going to be like, man, that was the guy, regardless of where the pick is?
Oh, you know, in this draft?
Yes, in this draft.
You know what? Look, the guy who's the freak, who it's hard to get your mind wrapped around just how big, tall, long, athletic he is. I mean, it's Kyle Pitts. That's the guy who's like, I mean, he's – because, look, when you watch guys like Darren Waller, out there in Vegas, or George Kittle, Travis Kelce, these guys, you realize that, and I in particular realize that they're so big and long and lanky, it's hard to defend that size. But at the same time, they're faster than you. So it's like, now what do I do? They're just as strong and bigger than me, and they're faster than me. So there aren't many DBs who are 6'6", 250 pounds.
Yep, and catches everything, right?
Right. We know DBs now are like we're saying, they're 6 foot, 200 pounds. Well, this guy's 6 inches taller than you. His wingspan is a foot longer than yours, and he may be a tenth, two tenths faster than you. So what the hell do you do with that? And that's where – but here's the other point that you just made, right? This is where, like, for me, what drives me up a wall with secondary play and pass defense overall right now is this desire for many DBs to play basketball with guys, meaning just let them off the line and think you can just run along with them and undercut them, get in between themselves and the ball and just make plays. No, you can't. You can't do that. They're going to just go over top of you and take, you know, Kyle Pitts is going to take the ball off the top of your head and laugh at you and dunk it, and, you know, and then be slamming it in your face. You better beat them up at the line. I was just watching some Mel Blunt highlights the other day. It was his birthday.
Wow.
And he was talking about the fact that, you know, the five-yard chuck rule, he says they call it the Mel Blunt rule because back in the days of the early 70s, you could beat up receivers all the way down the field. And Mel, if you know how big, you know how big Mel Blunt is, mm-hmm. he looks like, you know, he looks like Kyle Pitts playing corner.
Yep.
That's why they stopped doing it. Well, you better start taking that mentality into the first 5 yards of a wide receiver's release and a guy like Kyle Pitts, because if you don't, it's over. And it may be over anyway because he's just better than you. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that guy's a freak, dude. He's a freak. And I would not – look, a guy like Rashawn Slater from Northwestern, although he's an offensive tackle slash guard who we go, you know, whatever. Rashawn Slater may be an all-pro his rookie year. He's that good. And I love
– And he's a little bit undersized too, right? I mean, 305. But, matter, right?
Yeah, but you know what? When you watch his tape in 2019 against Ohio State when he's blocking Chase Young, they weren't giving him any help. He was shutting him down. I mean, shutting him down. He'll be an all-pro. If he's an all-pro his rookie year, do not be shocked. Whether it's tackle or guard. There's a lot of good – I'm very excited about this. There's a lot of good players in this year. Jamar Chase is a damn freak, okay? Mm-hmm. This guy is a man at 20 years old or whatever. He had that season in 2019. He was 19 years old, okay? I've got a 20-year-old daughter. And I look at her, and then I look at Jamar Chase, and I go, Jamar Chase looks like a grown man. My daughter's more of a kid. That doesn't even compute to me.
Yep.
So yeah. There's some real good players, Kev. There's some, but Kyle, I think Kyle has everybody intrigued just because, I mean, he's like a pterodactyl who runs forward. It's weird. It's weird how good he looks. It's weird.
He's the evolution of football. No doubt. And they don't grow on trees. It's not one of those, hey, yeah, I'm going to get one of those. This is like a freak once in a generation.
Yeah.
Size-wise, the combo talent.
He's truly, truly a generational guy. We use that word a lot. Mm-hmm. This is a real honest application when you use it with him.
Okay, before we wrap up, I do want to focus on one quick thing, and I said – the quarterbacks, but I am fascinated with the day two potential conversation, especially when you're talking about, or even teams that would drop back in the first round, like the Washingtons or the Bears or the Patriots or the Steelers that are looking to find somebody outside that top five when it comes to quarterback play. And then when you look at these guys like Kellen Mond, you had one guy, I mean, Kyle Trask, you can make that. Yeah, Jamie Newman, because if you look at the size. But you have one guy, Davis Mills, and you brought him up a couple times. Is he the one of those guys that you can see surprise a few people in that conversation, late first round, early second round, and be picked by a team that's smart looking? Hey, we don't need him now, but we're going to need him maybe in a couple years.
Yep. The only thing that – look, Davis has some durability issues, or let's just say durability concerns. Going forward, Davis Mills, think about the offense that he came from. He comes from at Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And think about David Shaw. Think about the quarterbacks David Shaw has coached. Again, just like when you're, you know, when you're looking at Trey Lance and you look at his offense, and then you say, okay, if I just put the jerseys of the Falcons on that offense, it looks like that offense. Okay, when you look at Stanford and you change the jerseys of Stanford and put San Francisco 49, it's like, okay, that's a pro offense. These are pro concepts that they're running. You know they're giving him a ton at the line of scrimmage as far as, you know, options that he has between checking from pass to run, run to pass, changing protections, and he handles all that. Now, besides that, how does he play the game? This kid is a sweet passer of the football. I mean, Kev, it is a sweet stroke. There's touch, there's accuracy, there's velocity, there's movement passes, there's 3, 5, 7-step passes, there's passes down the middle, there's passes outside the numbers, the go balls, the back shoulder, every single thing, a full complement of passes that you need to throw in the NFL, he throws them. He throws them. And what the best thing I saw about him is they play UCLA late in the season at UCLA, and he throws basically 3 picks in the beginning, you know, early on in the game. One of them was a pick six, and they're just getting stomped. They get behind because he threw a pick six. And he comes back, and he is this zoom, zoom, zoom. I mean, I'm sitting there going, who is this Davis Mills guy? Who is this guy? Why are we talking about him? And then I realized he's a 5-star prospect. He was, he was one of the very best at the Elite 11 quarterback camps. He's been tutored by David Shaw. And I'm going, whoa, hold on. Hold on. There's a lot lining up for this young man right here that is going to project to potential future success. But he's had some injuries. He wasn't, you know, he's a 1-year starter. 1.5-year starter. He hasn't played on national TV. He doesn't come from a big time program. But I'm telling you, Kev, Kyle Trask played at a big time program.
Mm-hmm.
There was someone who was throwing all these passes to Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney.
Yep.
Someone who was just dropping these passes in there beautifully. And it was Kyle Trask.
And he has the size. Like when you look at him, I mean, he's a statue, but he has the size to stay in the pocket.
That's the number one. I'll tell you what. That's the number one thing that automatically has people, you know, develop this negative bias towards a guy like him and a guy like me, is that he is a classic pocket passer, mm-hmm. and he's not a two-dimensional run pass threat. That's what starts not. That's what makes people kind of go, "Eh, I don't want to look at him. Show me some Zach Wilson tape. I want to watch that." This kid can throw the football, and you're right. Those two guys in particular, and Kellen Mond also. Look, Kellen didn't have the same kind of perimeter weaponry that a lot of these other teams had. Mm-hmm. But as far as the short intermediate passing game, this kid played very, very well. Very well. And you saw, and if you watch tape of his pro day, hey, the good old, holy grail Zach Wilson roll left throw, right throw, he threw it as well as anybody.
Yes, he did, man. Towards that end zone to the right side, right. That was a bomb.
And you know what? And we're not doing – and look, we're talking about things right now that all of us can see that, yeah, it plays a part in what their success is going to be like, but you hit on it at the very beginning. Where does he go? Mm-hmm. And what do they do for him once he gets there?
Mm-hmm.
And how does he take it all in and utilize it? We know that's what it's going to determine whether or not, Kyle Trask becomes an afterthought, Kellen Mond becomes an afterthought. Really, whether or not Zach Wilson becomes an afterthought. What happens after they call their name once we get up there to Cleveland for the draft?
Love it, man.
The clock starts ticking.
Love it, love it. And you know what? I cannot wait for your draft coverage, of course, as we're less – and you have the countdown in your Twitter account, which I appreciate because it's a daily reminder for me.
I'm going to update 29. It today. I didn't update it yesterday. I got to hit it today.
All right, well, listen, I'm with it. I'm with you the entire time because April 29th will be a lot of fun, Lewis. We appreciate your thoughts and your time. Shedding some light, and we're going to keep an eye on Slater. Slater works those angles. We're going to keep an eye on this young man as well as Davis Mills.
No doubt. I appreciate it, man.
Be well, man. Take care.
Okay.
Big thanks to Lewis Riddick. Love talking to the guy. We could have had this podcast go at least 2 hours because there's just so much good nuggets and information, and his perspective is so unique, I think, from all the voices that we often hear on social media as well as, on the radio and TV when it comes to the draft opinions. And as promised, letting you know, we will have many more conversations like this leading up to the draft in the next few weeks with we've got a prospect lined up who's expected to be one of the top players in the draft to join us. I won't reveal his name just yet, but he should be joining us on one of our podcasts in the next couple of weeks, and look forward to that. In the meantime, big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, our producer, who makes sure everything is buttoned up and ready to go. And until then, enjoy the week and stay safe and healthy. Talk to you soon.